You're paying for it. You're paying it through the weather tax, the price Mother Nature imposes upon your business, both real or perceived. You pay a weather tax when you fly on United. For all those delays, it's in your ticket, right? So weather costs money. The question is, are you going to get better control of that by having better data to reduce the uncertainty when you can fly? And my job is to get you flying as much as possible.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
All right, hey, welcome to the Hangar X Studios podcast. And this is where innovators and operators and executives and investors come to get the information that they need right now to make decisions going into the future. And I'm excited to let you know that we are sponsored by Hangar X Daily. So you can go to hangarxdaily.com. Hangar X Daily, there's about 800 to 2,000 articles in our entire aerospace industry that are published every single day. Hangar X Daily actually reads every single one of them and distills it down to the intelligence that you need, the key articles, why it's important. So in 5 minutes a day, you can actually stay up on all the news that we believe is important. So our entire team uses it, and we're doing it for free for everybody who's out here in our entire audience. So hangarxdaily.com. So now with that, I want to talk about advanced air mobility, drones, UAS systems. We're talking about them everywhere. They're going to scale. And for them to scale safely, I don't believe it's going to be limited by batteries or airframes or technology first. I think it's going to be limited by weather. So that might be an interesting point of view, but we're going to discuss that today because nobody that I know of understands this reality better than Don Burkoff. So Don, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks. Yeah, no, you're talking my favorite subject.
Well, good. You know, I remember when I went through Navy flight school and I'm like, we got to take a weather course. This is not going to be hard. Boy, was I wrong. I struggled. It is hard. So we're going to talk about some things today because, pilots, trained pilots and crews, this is something we study, we know. That said, there's some low altitude micro weather. It's a real hidden constraint on the use of drones, the adoptions of drones. AAM in the future, even eVTOLs. There's sensing and forecasting equipment and technology right now that's coming, but it directly impacts even today. You guys have experienced it at the airports, dispatch rates, safety, and profitability. What happens when the airport's delayed? What happens when I have 1,000 drones flying in Denver or 10,000 drones flying in New York City that people count on now for emergency services? Through convenience, I have to take all this into account on whether I can even fly that day. So there's some things that traditional aviation gets right and wrong, and Don has an opinion on that. We're going to talk about that, especially in some dense urban operations. So here, a little background on Don here, founder and CEO of True Weather Solutions, and that's trueweather.com, right? T-R-U, weather?
Yep, no E. Yep.
Yep, trueweather.com. So it's weather risk management analytics delivered on some very high resolution, low altitude weather intelligence, specifically for UAS, UTM, which is the unmanned traffic management. There's a whole nother area that's also advancing. It's going to depend on weather and also advanced air mobility. So you've been 40 years in weather, aviation, logistics. You've designed global aviation weather systems. You've co-authored the FAA's next-gen weather concept of operation. You were the director of the National Weather Service Office and Science and Technology. So nobody better to talk about on this with you, Don. So let's start with this. Could you define what micro weather means to everybody out there listening in some practical terms?
Sure. So, it depends on who you talk to. I usually view it as 1 kilometer or less resolution in a grid. Any weather event that occurs in there could be micro weather. Now, it could couple itself with several grids. It's the whole idea here is it's really hard to really collect data about it because we don't have high enough density data systems. If you look at what the AAM national strategy came out, I think they're using 2 kilometer grids. So it just depends. But the point is our best weather model in the United States today is 3 kilometer resolution. And anything that is subgrid to that is hard. You can't see it. And if you don't measure it, you don't know it's there. So, you know, our weather systems, we have a big gap above the ground. We don't measure much above the ground to 5,000 feet. Satellites cover us really well down to 5,000. We got a lot of aircraft flying that carry AMDAR and TAMDAR equipment. They work well. Once you get below 5,000, the satellites start degrading, and really it's the surface data next. So we have this gap, and what we do with our models is we take what we do have, we try to figure out what's happening in between those areas, so it's an estimate already of what we think is happening based on physics. And what we find is when you get closer to the ground, that all falls apart. And that's why sometimes you see those surprises about where the ground fog is or where patches of fog are or how those winds can be much different even at 1,000 feet than what you anticipated. And that works okay when you have a pilot on the aircraft because they go, oh, shit, I got to figure out how to get out of this. But when you take the pilot off, because, you know, we gave you all the responsibility. We said, look, we don't know what's really happening out there. And I can guarantee you, you know that in the Navy. Man, we say, go have fun. And then, you know, you run into stuff and you had to get back, right? A lot of stuff. But that was your job to get out of it. When you take the pilot off the aircraft in a drone or you automate it or go fully autonomous, it's a different story now. You lost the best weather sensor we've ever had. And so we got to backfill that now with digital data if we're going to capture these micro weather climates, because today they're not knowable and discernible. The pilot tells us about them when they run into them.
And yeah, I know. PI reps, I always check the PI reps before I flew. And you know, I was on the radio talking to the other pilots. But what are the practical implications, Don, by, you know, you talked about you need a 1 kilometer resolution. The best we have really is 3. What does that mean?
And that's an estimate. And remember, that's an estimate. So there's a lot of uncertainty in that 3 because we don't collect enough data. So we need to first collect enough data so we can start filling in the grids better, right? We want to know what's really happening to run a model better. The practical implications are you can't know what you don't know. So if you're operating a drone beyond visual line of sight and you're looking at the current weather systems out there, there's stuff going on you can't see. You can't see it. So you're going to get surprised. Now, hopefully your aircraft can deal with that. Remember, no pilot. So sometimes our sensors aren't sophisticated enough to see things that a pilot sees or feels. So you might catch your aircraft getting into a surprise, like freezing drizzle in an area you don't expect because everywhere else it's drizzle, or they didn't talk about a patch of freezing drizzle. And so what we have to do is figure out how to fill that. Otherwise, what happens is you have to be very conservative then in your flight decisions. And what we see today, even 30% of manned aviation or crewed aviation today, especially, you know, helicopters and low altitude, 30% of the time they could have flown when they didn't fly. They didn't fly because of the uncertainty. So that's revenue on the ground. Or
now, what do you mean by the uncertainty? What was the uncertainty there?
The uncertainty is that, you know, if you're flying a helicopter and you're trying to figure out if you got to go pick up some medical emergency off the highway, and there's no at the helipad, there's no weather measurement devices other than a windsock, and they could be fog, but you don't know. There's no fog at the airport.
So I could take off special VFR. I could get a clearance and start out my journey, but then I don't want to end up like Kobe Bryant because that pilot actually got caught in it. Basically, IFR got stuck in the clouds and got disoriented.
Exactly.
And that led to that accident.
So if they got to take somebody from the hospital in an emergency situation from the road and they could see everything, but they get to the hospital and it's fogged in, you got to divert. You've got somebody's life at stake. It would have been better sending ground transportation. So the whole idea here is there's a lot of, in this uncertainty about weather, when it gets down to the real, where the rubber meets the road and there's a lack of data, there's a lot of decisions made based on uncertainty that cause you either A, not to fly when you could, or B, you fly and then you run into a problem. And that's not going to work for drones because you don't have a pilot on board to go, I can't get into that, you know, I have to divert or get to that situation. It just costs money. It's just going to drive costs up.
Let me ask you this then. If I don't have a pilot on board, can I just fly IFR? I have my navigation. I know my altitude. I have the deconfliction. Is there a time in the future where I could fly through a cloud bank or a fog system to get from A to B and nobody cares because it's all everything else is automated? I don't need any of the visual cues.
So you got to decide when that's going to be, when FAA is going to allow it. You know, it's definitely, you know, we're going to something called digital flight. It could happen, right? But I think to get from here to there, you got to make your business models work in the meantime so you don't go out of business, right? Or you don't underpromise to your investors. And so the other challenge too is there's certain weather conditions that it doesn't matter. If you run into freezing drizzle or icing that wasn't anticipated, that's a problem no matter what. You got situations of winds aloft. The winds aloft are the really big problem. It's bigger than the fog problem because your battery power, you talked earlier, the battery, you're not, you know, worried about energy, but it's a conserved system. And the bottom line is like when you used to calculate winds as a pilot on your aircraft, just so you knew how much fuel to carry, how much weight to carry, you could put a lot of slop into that and you'd be fine, right?
It was safe to take off and land, which still applies to a smaller aircraft.
Well, that's right. But when you talk about trying to, this has to be done more like with a microscope than what you were using back then, which was a wide end camera lens, right? You got to get it down now because your battery power is going to decide how much you, what alternate you can get to if you can, how much weight you should carry, how much time is going to be impacted by your movement, because especially in some smaller drones, if you have good headwinds, it's going to be impactful. And it really gets down to like renewable energy. You know how, I don't know if you understand, like when you do wind farms, if you're off 2 knots of wind or 1 knot of wind on the forecast, it can cost them $1 million, right? We're going to get to that level where the wind down to 5 knots, 2 knots in error is going to cost money. It's just, it adds up and it's going to be cumulative. And so my argument is that you could get that weather infrastructure out there. We can improve significantly what we have today because today we don't really measure any wind in urban canyons or at low altitude. Mm. And we can give you more certainty.
Yeah, because we don't need to today, do we?
You don't need to because you have a lot of slop in the system. Yep. and you got a pilot, right? But if you really got to get down to like, am I going to be able to take that 5-year-old with his mother and father at the vertiport because I just got there, my flight takes off in an hour, but now there's no way I can get there on the ground. And they just told me the winds are much stronger. We can't take that weight. You have to leave your son behind, right? I don't know if you ever saw the Curb Your Enthusiasm. There's one where they had to take a business jet. And he had to get the weights of the women, and they wouldn't give him the weights. And so they got down to the airfield like days later, and the pilot says, you know, we were too heavy. Somebody's gonna have to stay behind. And so it was Larry that wound up staying behind while the women took off to go on their vacation. So you gotta understand, I've worked with some of these operators, and I understand they need to know that 2 hours in advance or 3 hours in advance. You can't, it's not just a go, no go on the moment decision. You've got to know, otherwise you're going to impact your customer, you're going to impact your reliability, and that's going to kill your business model because people need to have reliability if they're going to use these types of services.
And a question for you, you know, I think with your experience designing global weather centers and also the whole next gen weather system here in the continental United States, what are some things that we're getting right today around weather integration, and then what breaks down when we get into lower altitude, you know, more dense operations?
Well, I think what we're getting right is, you know, our models are tremendous. I want to make sure I make that clear. I mean, you're old enough to remember what it could be like. I'm old enough to get beat up about what it was like. I used to fly on KC-135s and KC-10s as an aircrew meteorologist. And, you know, we had to go across the Atlantic and drag F-16s and F-15s in the mid-80s. And, you know, you hit turbulence and you can't get the AR track in. And who were the first person? I was on the airplane. So there was no greater accountability than that. Now, half the time I did tell the pilots you didn't pay attention to my briefing. And I said the turbulence was there. But that's another issue. And I know you know what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is that what we get right is our models have gotten good in the upper atmosphere. We have really good transmission of real-time data on ACARS and AMDAR. It does help us really understand what's happening aloft. Our turbulence forecasting of, high altitudes has gotten better. And I think that, obviously at an airport, as long as it's well instrumented, you do okay. What we don't do well right now is like with thunderstorms, right? You can watch what happens to the whole east part of the United States if there's a line of thunderstorms in Pennsylvania. It just kills air traffic management. It drives everybody into a disaster mode of trying to recoup and figure out how we're going to keep up with it. So thunderstorms are tough and they cause a lot of delays today. And though, in those types of delays caused by thunderstorms, really thunderstorms are a very significant event that, you got big aircraft have to take heed of. Smaller drones and air taxis, they don't have to have thunderstorm events to be a big impact. If the winds are blowing too strong and it blowing in through a vertiport with a building effect, you might shut down that vertiport, but you're still taking off at the airport, right?
So, Dom, what's that called? I'm here in Colorado, and there's days, when thunderstorms come through, I fly a Cirrus up to 25,000, Cessna 172, Decathlon. People are familiar with these small airplanes, right? We're talking about aircraft that are smaller than that. And there's days, though, it's a beautiful day. But what is it called? The mechanical turbulence, just the air coming off the mountains or even flying across a prairie, the turbulence from heated, lifted air can be. I've been in severe turbulence in a 172 on a beautiful day, seemingly out of nowhere. I can't imagine a small drone or even like a 100, 200 pound, let's say UAV that was on, let's say a cargo mission, that whatever was in there would have been broken.
So all that heating that you're talking about mechanical turbulence that, you're talking about mountain wave, bigger aircraft, boom, 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 right? Imagine the reason it's the micro weather so concerning in the boundary layer is the heating of the earth. You're going to be flying in the most turbulent layer of the whole time. If you're flying at 500 feet, you're at 500 feet, So you're going to be getting a lot of these effects. Now, it doesn't mean it's like that every day, but here's the problem. 80% of the time, no problem, right? The problem is when you have that other 20% and you don't know what you don't know. You have to be now, you have to carry more battery reserve all the time because we don't know, right? I can't tell you that there's not a localized effect through terrain today or not because I can't measure and see it. So you have to carry more battery power, which means you carry more reserve, you carry less cargo. This is going to become a major factor in revenue and in getting the full use out of all these aircraft because you don't have the weather digital infrastructure required to know and be certain about what's happening. When we're certain about something, we'll get you flying more. I always tell people 30% of the time when you cancel a delay due to weather, you could have flown. That's pretty much a fact for you too. Now, the fact is here, we see it with low altitude drones. We see that up to 40%. And my contention is with better low altitude infrastructure, we can reduce the uncertainty. We're taking that uncertainty and getting it down where we can get you maybe 30% of that back or 50% of that back with better data. So people say, I don't want to pay for weather. Well, you are paying for it. You're paying it through the weather tax, the price Mother Nature imposes upon your business, both real or perceived. You pay a weather tax when you fly in United. They, for all those delays, it's in your ticket, right? So weather costs money. The question is, are you going to get better control of that by having better data to reduce the uncertainty when you can fly? And my job is to get you flying as much as possible. And so the way you do that is you have better data and you build better systems to get that data into systems so that when it's automated and there's not a pilot anymore making the decisions all the time, we have that built into the system to get you more efficiency, more effectiveness, more passenger reliability. That's really, it's a totally different paradigm than what we're used to thinking about because weather's built into the slop already in all the big airlines. You just pay for it and you're okay with paying for it.
Well, and let's think about it. You're talking about the businesses. I want to talk about the economics a little bit.
Sure.
What does it take to get to the place? Think about it. We just had a guest on from ANRA that was talking about, they're doing, traffic.
Is this a Mitt or Grit or Brett or who was it?
Amit, yeah, he was amazing.
Yeah,
he had a great point. He said, hey, there's 10,000 airplanes flying globally at any one point. They're all very trained pilots. They understand the weather system, the risk, the briefing, and, you know, they're very qualified. Fast forward a very short period of time, we could have 100,000 or 1 million drones, UAS aircraft in the air. So what it requires is what you're talking about, right? Some, you know, sensing networks in urban environments, better data quality frameworks. So there's a timeline and there's better models.
Well, so we'll be able to use machine learning. You see today, learning.
Talk about that, Don, because you know what, that, I think, you know, I think the UTM piece, right? What, companies like Honra do in this weather piece is going to be, what do you call it? Foundational to unleash this potential of what could be around drones, UTM and AAM.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know I'm a little biased, but you know, let me just say, though, I'm a scientist as well as an operator, and I'm try to be fair about this. You know, I've seen way too many weather events that have impacted a plan, right? And that were preventable. And so when I think about this, I think about what you just said. We're going to have a lot of drones flying, a lot of money flying around. So those weather impacts that you experience today, they're multiplied by 100,000, I don't know. And that's money. Everything's a cha-ching, right? So, the bottom line is that in the systems, we got to make sure that we have good digital data getting into a MIT system. Why? Because the current data is not resolute enough. And so you're either going to have more risk by not knowing what's occurring, or you're going to become very conservative, right? We all know what happens. You have a couple of incidents, and the next thing you know, you become conservative for about 6 months, and then the boss says you got to start flying more sorties. You're not flying enough sorties, and you take more risk, right? And then the circle starts again. I was at Kunsan for a year with F-16 pilots trapped.
I was in Itsugi, and we'd go over to Osan and Kunsan quite a bit.
So I know this gig, right? So what we need to do is have a very stable system so that doesn't happen. And the way you do that is you get better data. And through these networks of data collection, it's not just me saying this. The FAA said it in their MPRMS for part 108 and 146. Basically, pages, if you don't believe me, it's pages 96, 97, and 98. They talk about how once you get away from a METAR site, once you get more than 5 miles away, the weather may not be relevant to what you're using anywhere else in that area, outside that area drone. You've been on airfields where half the runway was fogged and the other half wasn't.
That's true.
Right? So yep. The bottom line is that I know I have been, and I've got my ass kicked for it. So here's the thing is that you have to recognize that when you get, you know, we like these rules. Everyone likes rules, right? Weather rules don't work. It's, you know, unfortunately, weather doesn't like your, you know, doesn't work well with your rules. I'm sorry, right?
But weather doesn't care about your rules. It has its own rules, and they're fairly immutable.
Yes. And so when you start on days when the weather is usually the most challenging is the days when that 5 mile radius doesn't work. It's usually less than that because it's uncertainty and there's fog or whatever. And so those rules go out the window. But even the FAA said between those 5 mile circles, you don't know what's happening. And so we got to figure that out. Then if you look at the AAM national strategy, pillar number 2 that came out from on the 17th of December says weather infrastructure is one of the 4 pillars of infrastructure required to make this work. And they go into why.
And what are the other 3? Do you remember, Don?
Yeah, they were physical, like for vertiport, building vertiports. It was energy and it was spectrum. And so we're, you know, I'm happy because I've been fighting for that for 8 years. People have always looked at weather as being supplemental. I kept saying to them, imagine a future where the pilot isn't on the aircraft anymore. Imagine a future when these aircraft are powered by battery. Imagine a future where they're lighter. Imagine a future where people are going to depend on the reliability of using them. You know, even in the Ukraine war, if you talk to people, all the drone stuff's great, right? They say, don't get rid of my artillery, though, because I'm not going to be able to use drones in every day because the weather will impact that and it will be hard for me to drop my bomb. So I still need my ground-based artillery. We don't want to see the Army trade in all their artillery because they got these great drones because they're not going to fly.
Well, you know, if you're counting on drones for, you know, tactical, let's say, squad to squad, those, right, they can't fly IFR because they're all visual. They're all first person view. So there's days that are grounded.
And there's the wind or precipitation intensity. Let me just say, I love the all weather aircraft. So let me just define all weather to me, and then I'll define what everybody else. Okay. And all weather doesn't mean to me just VFR or IFR. All right. So all weather to me means, can I operate? And period, whatever it is. And so when people say my aircraft's all weather, most of the regular population doesn't understand that that's speak for I can fly in fog, right? It's not I can fly in, tornadoes. I can't, So there, I remember since I was a lieutenant, they told me they had we're going to have all weather aircraft. I always ask people, what happens if you have 2 feet of snow on the runway? How are you going to get off the ground? They go, well, I didn't mean that. Well, how about if you... So, I have a lot of fun in the bar with my F-16 friends, right?
So you're an absolutist. You think all means all?
They all... Well, no. I'm just saying, you got a lot of misinformation coming out of some of these aircraft manufacturers, because when people think all mean all, they think it means all. Well, you guys, right, the pilots know better, right? But you get my point.
I've pushed that all boundary before. A little scary. Hey, let me ask you a question. I'm just putting on my hat as been a pilot for 35 years, right? My understanding of weather and the systems and everything I've been taught and what the systems are as of today that I'm aware of, okay? Now I'm switching and I'm a pilot and I'm moving into either flying drones or AAM. How should I be asking maybe either different or smarter questions as I'm kind of putting my focus from, commercial or general aviation down into what's happening in the low altitude?
Well, first off, I'd like to tell you that the workflow should be different.
Okay.
And I would love to build it for you, for all those new pilots out there. Micro weather is not, the worst thing that the FAA ever did, and they know this, I'm going to say this, and they'd still love me, is that when they did the Part 107 weather training, it was the worst thing we could have done, because we brought in old weather stuff that didn't apply to micro weather. We told people, use your app, right? And it was because it was visual line of sight, and I was okay with that.
Yeah, right? It's not much different than I have on ForeFlight.
Right. But the problem is now there's a new weather standard out, by the way. I helped write it, ASTM F38. It's going to allow for third-party providers to be certified. But, your weather app, when you start flying BB loss, you can't use that because it's not approved weather. Part 108 and 146, it says, you got to use approved weather. What does that mean? It means you have to use government weather. Well, if you only can use government weather, it means you're not going to get the micro weather. But we're fixing that. So we got the standard. And the new Part 146 is going to allow third-party weather providers that follow the standard for you to use them. And that's like with EMIT and all these. They'll be allowed to use third-party weather. The sensors that we're going to start deploying will fall under that. They'll be much cheaper, less expensive than ASOSs, and they'll close the gaps that you need to understand as a pilot. So as part of this training and this workflow, we want to show people how to really use the data that's available, not just read a model. Because if you just read a model, it's not picking up the things you can't see, but maybe we could pick them up in the sensing. And so we need you to start looking at real data, right? That's what I would tell people. I tell them to start understanding microclimates, and when they're a problem, like drizzle on days when it's 35 degrees, if you fly 10 or 15 miles, you might run into patches of freezing drizzle. Nobody knows where they are. Be aware of that, right? So this is the kind of stuff that we could train.
Well, I'm guessing freezing drizzle on a small airplane is problematic. I can't imagine on a drone that could fly it right into the ground, I'm guessing. I don't know. I've never actually seen a test of a drone flying into freezing drizzle, but I'm guessing it's not good.
The answer is yes, and I know of somebody who actually had a VLOS mission, and I won't, he's a good friend, and they were flying, and he lost it, and temperature was 34 degrees where he was flying drizzle. He went into some valley that he could see, and he lost his drone because it was freezing drizzle. So my point is that's microclimate stuff, right? And so what's going to happen? that happens, and then you don't fly. You start reducing your flight rates, right? Because your boss didn't like the fact you lost a $50,000 drone with a LiDAR on it, right? So, I mean, these are the things. I mean, I'm just trying to help, right?
Well, like, and the LiDAR could be another $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Like when we're when you're actually getting into commercial applications, some of these platforms are $30,000 to $200,000, and they're doing real work and they're making that company money. And I don't want to take it out of service either because I didn't know the weather.
And their pilots are using very loosey goosey weather stuff that really is not built for that mission. And you know, especially if you start flying BV loss, right? Because now if it goes 10 miles down range, you really don't know necessarily on the edges what's going on out there. Now, if it's a really, you know, perfectly clear day but you know, that's not the days I'm talking about. I'm talking about that 20 or 30% where you're on the edge in something and you have to make a decision. And that adds up. The cost of all that adds up. I haven't yet fully computed it, but the price of weather on the U.S. economy, though, in 2017 was $634 billion, if that's anything for you. And that's not like destroying stuff. That's productivity impacts. It's huge. And we could get a third of that back with a better weather systems. And that's a macro. On the micro, I could get you back 30% of your flight time, your accuracy, your weight carried. You know, we can do that if we have better weather measurements. It's not rocket science. We just got to make the investment in the infrastructure.
Hey, okay, so we've been talking about the investment in the infrastructure. A lot of this is going to be government, big industry partners. Let's look at the other end here as we kind of wrap up. Let's just say you're sitting there and you're advising a CEO and they have a drone that they built, they're manufacturing, or they're going to bring in their own AAM fleet. What is the single weather related investment or capability you would insist they prioritize right away?
You mean on their aircraft or anywhere?
How about both?
You say that. So,
well, I want your opinion because you know what, you are the source, Don.
So on the drone, we want to get, you know, telemetry data can work for winds and backing out flight control data, but it's not as clean as people believe. It changes based on how you're flying the aircraft. So you need some sense of reliability. So I would say you really want to get a wind sensor on those drones if you can, because once you collect that wind data, first of all, you know what you're flying in for real. Second is we use that for machine learning.
Now, is a wind sensor different than the data I'd get from like either inertial nav or some kind of gyro?
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. So the accelerometer is good for turbulence, like EDR, okay. but you know, you really, you know, if you, you know, there's a reason there's a pitot tube and other sensors used on a regular aircraft, then you're not using your telemetry to calculate your winds because there's errors in it. Right. Mm-hmm. Now those errors change. That's the problem. If things are stable, it's not a big deal, but they're not. Right. So we like to get a wind sensor, on the ground. If you're flying low altitude, say below 2,500 feet. We want to get more solometers out there. Invest, if you have a vertiport, invest in the right weather equipment. It might cost you $150,000, $200,000, but it's going to save you millions and millions over time. A vertical wind LiDAR that can see the winds up to 1,500 feet, so you know what's happening with your battery for sure. A solometer so you can get cloud height, visibility, things like that, right? You put those at the vertiports. Today, heliports don't have that. They just have a windsock a lot of times. That's not good enough. You need to get that 3D wind. And once we get enough of those out, if enough vertiports have wind and we then have some strategic infrastructure that's paid by the states, because it's not going to be the federal government, I'll just tell you, it won't fund this. We can start building that microclimate. And then we could share that data, you know, figure out what the business model is. You want to, you know, for your vertiport wind LiDAR and your solometer, you want me to pay you a certain, you know, quarter of a penny or whatever. If we resell that data or reuse it in something else, you want to just contribute it in kind and get other people's back free. You know, this is the business models I'm working on right now. Under the AAM National Strategy, they talk about this. And True Weather is involved in EIPPs, hopefully. This, I don't know if you know what these are, these, right?
Yep.
So we're on 14 teams in consortiums and some of the biggest ones. And the goal is for us to work with these EIPPs and with the local state and local government, see if they can invest in some CapEx Let's get some strategic weather infrastructure out, and then let's work with the vertiports to get them to purchase some infrastructure. And now you got yourself what you need, right? We could start really, really getting that microclimate a lot better. And we have the ability to take that data and run a CFD model. So, you know, the winds going through the urban canyons are not the same at the airport as at the airport. So we, you know, we could start seeing what those winds are going to look like around vertiports that are near buildings. And we can help you with your flow management. It gets back to what you're saying earlier about airspace management, right? We want to, since I wrote the Next Gen Weather ConOps in 2005, I understand, you know, what the whole goal was. It was to improve, you know, trajectory management and to improve velocity and get more aircraft, you know, into an airfield in the same amount of time, right? And, you know, and that's what weather controls all of that. You know that, right? So if we can get our arms around that by having better data, we can have better egress and express in and out of these vertiports. We can stack those aircraft properly based on the wind conditions that we know exist. And we can automate a lot of this and not have chaos. You know, like it's going to be worse than changing a runway, because at some of these vertiports, you may only get a 30 degree change in winds at the airport, but it could be 180 degrees at a vertiport if the winds are blowing through a canyon. We got to know that.
Or through a couple buildings. Like, exactly. I'm getting my helicopter rating, and I got to tell you, just coming in to land like in the alley between hangars,
right,
and the winds that shift rapidly is very, very different than landing, you know, half quarter mile that way on the runway in a normal fixed wing. So it's coming in close is very different dynamic.
And the helicopter pilots know this. So like I have great conversations because they're like my biggest fans, because if we can solve this problem for drones, we're going to help helicopters also get better data in the future, because right now they fly weather blind and they have to deal with it. And what's going to happen is if you can't get the angle of attack right for these electric eVTOLs coming in, you can use 20% of your battery reserve on approach because you missed the right angle of attack because of the winds. I want to get you those winds so you know I got to come in right here and right here. That's certainty, and that's better planning. And once we know and understand the environment, we're going to get more weight carried on those aircraft. You know, we're going to be able to divert a little further, you know, if we need to, because we can't get it. Think about a vertiport where you have an incident. Now you got people, you always are going to have to plan for battery reserve to get to an alternate. Where's those alternate? Where are they going to be? I mean, these are vertiports, right? So that's the stuff I think about all the time, is how are we going to fit weather into these planning and the system-wide efforts here? Because people that fly an aircraft like you, some days you're just like, I just want to land, but you're not thinking about all the other, you know, may not be thinking about all the other things that have to go into this equation to make an ecosystem work and let a business model work to really drive the low altitude economy to what it could do. And that's what we really feel, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, you know, make that low altitude economy more efficient and make more revenue and reduce impacts to, you know, the clients.
That's awesome. Well, Don, as you see breakthroughs, or you see some people really investing, or you see some companies really, maybe there's even a model like this city has put all this in place. We actually have real data that's going to be something the industry, or, you know, it might not be here in the U.S., but as you know, as you come up with stuff, as your company's doing things, love to have you come back on and just keep the conversation going. So,
well, we have a test bed in Fort Worth. I could have showed you some really cool wind stuff in urban areas that we're running every hour today. And we have sensors. We have a test bed around Alliance Airport. I want to thank
Chris Ash. Actually, I'm down here today, Don. I should have popped over.
So that's our test bed, and that's going to come out now. We built a lot of our systems already, and we got our APIs, and we're ready to go. We want to take that and bring it to the EIPP locations, right? And then if they invest in the infrastructure, we can just plug it in. We'll be up and running in 90 days for these people with this more advanced capability. Now, our modeling is going to take a little longer, because we have to do machine learning and things like that. But we're ready. And I've been playing on this for 7 years because we wanted to be ready when they started flying, not 5 years after they started flying. Because that's what the system would have, that's what would have happened. Because it took us 6 years to build what we have. And it would have taken anybody in government to do the same thing if they were paying attention to this. So yeah, I'd love to come back and share more with you.
Well, love to have you back. So keep knocking alive, Don. And, look forward to our next conversation, my friend.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.